Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I cannot say clearly enough that I think that super powerful paddles make the game boring. Powerful paddles means hitting the ball hard. No, it actually means you're afraid to hit the ball hard because it's coming back at you harder if you screw it up. Soft and spinny paddles are what the professionals should be playing with. And actually, baseball is a great example of this, right? Up until professional level, you're using aluminum bats. And then at the pro level, they've dumbed it down and you have to use wood bats. So they actually have worse technology at the professional level. I think we need to do the same thing. I think pros can already swing super hard. They can already generate more power on their own. Let's rein in the power of the paddle so that I can actually showcase my skill and my ability to hit the ball hard. Right. And it's not just the equipment.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bit tired today.
Yeah, why are you so tired?
I can't handle like even a single beer anymore from Saturday night, and I'm still feeling it.
So you've got the 72 hour hangover.
Yeah, I mean, mine will last for 6 to 7 months.
Oh,
generally.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty cool.
It's a good thing that we have Ryan Sherry as our guest on the podcast today. He's going to take us through all the different tips and tricks of how to get over a bender quickly.
I'd actually really appreciate that. I bet one of his go-tos is an IV.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah. There's an IV place right by me. I didn't do it, though. I should have. All right, I have a gift for you.
Oh, boy. I still have that hat. I still have the hat that you signed.
It should
appreciate
be framed.
That. A gift for me. Oh, boy. Is it a Celsius?
Wrong pocket.
Because I do see that. I am eyeing that.
These things are so cool, actually. Check this out.
No freaking way. Oh, my God.
How unbelievable is that?
They really turned this around quickly. Holy crap.
Yep. So this is a custom AI Zane and his cat. Kind of like if we were to mix Napoleon Dynamite and Zane. Let's see if we hold this thing up.
I am...
on the face of a paddle, on the back. You get a little pickle pot action.
I'm rarely speechless, but I did not see that coming.
So this is from Dan at Pickle, P-I-K-K-L. And he texted me. He was like, do you have any like weird pictures of Zane? And I was like, I know exactly the picture. Sent it over to him, and he got these turned around pretty quickly. And he's coming on the pod later, so he's going to break down, you know, how you can get one and the whole spiel on Pickle.
Yeah, wow. Dan, you guys outdid yourself there. Oh, my goodness. Like, the cat, though, really?
Yeah.
The cat? I like the long hair, I like the glasses, the cat, I don't know, but I'm still pretty shocked, and I'm still taking all of this in. I'm excited to talk to Dan a little later.
Yeah, but to me, that's like, I look at that, and I'm like, that for every one of my family's birthdays going forward, they will be getting one of those.
Of me?
Yeah, maybe.
Of me with a cat and glasses. Well, dude, okay. So apparently I have to subscribe to the newsletter too to know what's going on at the Dink, mm-hmm. But I see yesterday that you guys announced that you're partnering up with Minor League Pickleball.
Yep.
What does that mean?
So we're partnering up with Duper, and Minor League Pickleball is now the Dink Minor Leagues. And basically what we want to do is help them market it, help them grow it. Operate it like a joint venture. We'll have over 200 events this year. If you're not familiar, it's basically like Major League Pickleball, but for amateurs. There's 6 different divisions, so it's like combined duper. And then you compete locally if there's an event in your area. If there isn't, you can reach out to us and we can help you get one started. And if you win locally, you go to the regionals. So we have regionals throughout the rest of the year in Malvern, PA, Plano, Texas, Kansas City, Missouri, Concord, California, Lake Stevens, Washington, Tempe, Arizona, Lakeland, Florida, Fenton, Missouri. And the winners of those will be invited to compete in a national championship at the Missouri Pickleball Club in Fenton, Missouri. And that's in December. So yeah, pretty big news for us. We're really excited about it. I mean, the goal is just to continue to grow this thing. I think with its footprint now, it's already the most expansive amateur competition. And we just want to continue to grow it and hopefully in the near future, expand it internationally as well.
Very cool.
So it'd be pretty cool.
Minor League Pickleball is owned by Duper,
yep.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're mentioning a joint venture, or are you, mm-hmm. So does that mean you guys have an equity stake now in this minor league pickleball?
I'm going to need everybody in the audience to sign an NDA before I can reveal any details around that. But
all right, consider it done. They all signed. Now what?
Our logo's in the name, so what does that tell you?
Nothing. That's why I asked the question.
you're not going to get any more information.
Interesting. Well, it's pretty exciting. Like, I think it's cool. I just love the team format. I know it's something that does very well for tennis with USTA State League and stuff, and having a local to regional to national sort of structure. You kind of went regional to national because we don't have yet the same sort of infrastructure as USTA State League, but I'm sure that's coming. And cool to see. I like to see minor league pickleball back up and running and crushing. And yeah. So just one more question. Mm-hmm. What does it mean that you're helping with the marketing? So are you, okay, take me through that. Like,
help promote it across all our different channels. We're going to live stream the regionals, live stream the national championship, provide coverage on a site, newsletter, social promo, and yeah, basically just helping like recruit people to come compete and then find people who want to establish a local tournament like in their area if they don't have one already.
Interesting. So at one point, minor league pickleball was selling teams, right?
Yeah, they're not doing that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. No. But major league pickleball is trying to sell two teams.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens there. I wonder what they're going to be able to sell them for at this point.
Who knows? I've heard the valuations all over the place.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot. A lot of different numbers thrown around.
Yeah. Every time there's a valuation thrown out there, somebody comments like, okay, but what are their financials? Like, how can you justify that valuation? I always go back to the point of it's what the market is willing to pay. That establishes the price point. It doesn't matter what the financials are. The financials can help you get to a point where the market's going to have demand. But if somebody wants to buy a team because of the hype around pickleball, they want to be involved, that's what, whatever that transaction price is, that's what sets the floor.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like somebody's just kind of trying to be smart without being smart.
Yeah, like, right. They're trying to point it out. Yeah.
The financials. Look, I mean, that was my world, right? Like, I was an auditor. There are no financials.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
The thing's been around since 2021, has run a handful of events, has merged, unmerged, merged, and unmerged, and merged again. Like, there's no financials. It's just your gut. That's the financials.
Yeah. So
if you're looking for an optimal P to E ratio or whatever the hell, some yeah, you probably know all those metrics.
Yeah,
there's none.
Pretend to.
There's none.
These days, ChatGPT will help you out with that. But yeah, so what I do know is that the PPA and Major League Pickleball, so they formed this UPA. Now that's been carved out as its own entity. We've referred to that as the NewCo. And they're operating that like one single venture, same financial statements and everything. And part of what they're trying to do is raise money. And part of that is, again, selling these two additional teams that they have, which I think was what? Milwaukee was one.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee sold their team back to the league or something.
Yep. And then there was one other, and then I think there was a third that was in the process of finding a buyer. So they'll have at least two teams to go to market with, and that will help fund some of the future projects and everything in years to come.
Interesting.
Yep. All right. Let's do PPA really quickly. You have any big takeaways? I thought there were some interesting results.
Absolutely. Leia is so back.
She's got that dog in her.
Honestly, we dropped the ball not having Leia on the podcast this week.
I know she's probably around too.
She is.
Yeah. All right, we'll do another episode.
She could have done her victory lap here.
She always crushes every time she comes on. Mm-hmm. Every time she goes on any podcast, it does really well.
All right, let's get her next week.
Yeah, she's kind of a cheat code. All right, Leia, please come on.
But, yeah, so Leia retired. Thomas notoriously always calls things, and Thomas called she's going to be back. To be fair, everybody and their mom called that Leia was going to be back. Like, that was not exactly like a hot take. But credit where credit is due, Thomas called it. She's back. She won. She beat Samantha Parker, who had a pretty decent tournament. She beat Mary Brescia, who doesn't lose a ton, beat Lacey Schneeman. We don't know anything about her, do we?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I kept Googling around and couldn't find anything on her. Eventually, I found that she played at UT Dallas Tennis. But that's about all I could figure out. So kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, for real. But anyway, I think Leia had a really gritty win against Paris in the semifinals. I think that was a pretty close match. So good to see her seemingly enjoying singles again. Yeah. I practiced singles with Leia a decent amount, probably like last summer and the summer before here in Austin. And I've always thought that she covers the net better than any other female I've ever played against.
I mean, she's right? Pretty tall. How tall is she? Like 5'9"?
Yeah. So she's somewhat tall, or taller for a female. And then also has a really good first step. Like, she mm-hmm. covers the net really, really well. And I think there's no reason why she shouldn't continue to play singles. I think this is going to be the start of a good run for her. But we'll talk to her next week. Yeah. Set your calendars. We haven't even texted Leia or anything, but she'll be on next week. Pencil it in.
All right. So men's singles, what do you think of Donald Young in his game? You think he's coming?
I mean, he had a good run. He had a very good run. Beating Carson Campbell is...
Kaysen.
Casey Campbell?
Kaysen.
Kaysen. That's what I said both times, right?
Yeah.
Carson, Casey, Kaysen. So he beat Fad, he beat Kaysen, he beat Connor Garnett, and he beat Jay. Like,
Do you say Fad? Is that how you say it? I always say FAD.
No, it's Fad.
I mean, it's all caps, so it's kind of an acronym.
It's Fad.
Okay, Fad.
Yeah, Frank Anthony Davis.
But yeah, good win. So the one, my biggest takeaway about Donald Young is like, okay, so obviously a very talented tennis player, knows how to compete at the highest level of a very established sport. When he came into pickleball, I think even players who were worse than him, for whatever reason, got more attention. He's always been somewhat of an afterthought, kind of neglected from the conversation. In my mind, somebody like that who knows how to compete, if he just puts in the time, and clearly he is, he's signed with the PPA, he's playing consistently, like, I could see him starting to really emerge as an actual competitor. And I think that because we haven't really talked about him, somebody like that takes that as a slight. It's like a chip on their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have reason to go out and compete even harder. So I'll be interested to see what he can do moving forward. But overall, he got fourth. And then, yeah, as you said, Duvillier, Garnett, Kaysen Campbell, and FAD, all good wins.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I've been encouraged just how much I've been seeing these guys around. Like, I don't know if Donald has missed a tournament yet. I feel like I've seen him at every tournament I've been at. Now, Jack has you know, not done a couple of them. He wasn't in Houston. But when I saw all these headlines of, like, Jeannie Bouchard got signed, Jack got signed, Donald Young got signed, I was like, okay, they probably got signed to, you know, 12 tournaments, 8 tournaments, something like that.
Right.
these guys are grinding at every one of them.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's pretty cool to see that these guys – now, we have no idea what they're doing in their off time. We don't know if Jack's doing two-a-days over in North Carolina grinding. But, like, they're at least showing up at the events.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jeannie. she got her first wins a couple weeks ago over in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Huge.
So I think it'll more – I think it's at least a step in the right direction. But who – he ended up losing to – who did he end up losing to?
I don't know.
It must have been either Fed – oh, it was Fed. I think Fed stopped the – I think Fed stopped the run there. Fed is looking just so consistent. It's so hard to beat Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Dude's fast. He's got a good backhand, good forehand, smart, good at pickleball.
I mean, he moves laterally very well. Like, he's very good at cat and mouse.
Mm-hmm.
He had one volley out of the air up the line that I replayed over and over again.
Yeah, so we have written here, 7 straight finals and his 3rd gold of the year. That's so difficult to do in singles.
Okay, so I don't know the point system, but now 350 PPA points behind Ben. How are the points divided? Do you understand the point system?
No.
Because I look at 350 and I'm like, that sounds like a lot. But I think if he has a good outing in LA, he could catch Ben.
Yeah, there's also like a – there's rankings and then there's like a points race as well.
Right.
Yeah, let's just leave it at Fed's really good.
Yeah. Right, because there's ranking and then there's points. And like points you could get just because you're there week in, week out,
mm-hmm.
whereas like other players are taking tournaments off. So, all right, in mixed, any big takeaways? I mean, you lost to – Declan, Tina Pisnik. What's Tina's game like? Seems like she is very solid and clearly established at this point.
Yeah, Tina's a baller. Never really misses. Probably one of the most consistent players on tour. She does not get style points, right? But she's just so smart. Like, she doesn't do anything flashy,
mm-hmm.
but she's just in the right position. And so she doesn't, I mean, people, I think, were calling her pick by the ranchers like a bad one, but she doesn't have a flashy game. And so when you don't have a flashy game, you don't get the attention that you might deserve. She's got the game and she's got the results. Like, she is not flashy, but she is the epitome of like just winning and getting it done. So super consistent, super smart. Her counters are really good. Great hands. And I think she's even better in that mixed doubles role, especially with somebody like Deckel, because she can really settle into her spot. I think the knock on her might be the mobility. And if she has to cover a lot of court, anybody when you are stretched beyond your comfort zone is going to miss more. But with Deckel, she can just kind of stay in her happy spot and really, really tough to beat. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as being the number 2 team right now, which we have written here, I would have to disagree that they're the number 2 team. Very good team, but mixed doubles, there are just so many good teams, right? There's Ben and Anna Lee, James and Anna. James has been battling a little bit of an injury lately.
What is that injury?
I think his back is bugging him.
Hmm. Been there.
We hate to see it. So they're up there, Jack and Catherine, Fed and Rachel have got to be in the consideration. You can't sleep on Thomas and Vivian. They seem to medal every time pretty much.
Yeah.
So I would probably put Tina and Deckel still behind all of those teams, but not by a lot. And I think as they continue to play together more, I think that they're going to be a tough team.
All right, let's cruise through the rest of these, and then we're going to bring Dan in. All right, Colin and Ben, they're good at pickleball. Rolled Fed and Pablo, so it was a 33-minute match. 11-0, 11-2, 11-2.
Yeah, that is a beatdown.
Yeah.
That's rough. Don't really know what else to say. It's just I'm surprised. somewhat surprised. Like, I thought it was going to be a very slow and grindy match given the conditions. I don't know how the play style went, but to beat a team like Fed and Pablo, I mean, Fed and Pablo, I think, have given Ben and Colin some good runs. They must have figured something out.
Yeah. All right. And your boy, Will Howells, had a good win with Rafa Hewitt, taking out Wright Nignatovich.
Oh, yeah. I was kitty cornered from that match listening. I could hear a lot of it. That was a loud match over there.
At the end, they did the funniest chest bump, like right in the face of Wright and James.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. It was just funny. Just Rafa being Rafa. But that would be like, I don't know, is Howells typically a loud, kind of in-your-face player, or he's pretty reserved? Okay, so he's like a vocal guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was just a Rafa effect.
I'm sure there's, I'm sure the Rafa effect didn't hurt.
Yeah, right. You think it was an easy weekend for Bright and Rohrabacher?
Do they have any close matches?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty... I think there's Anna Lee and Catherine, Anna and Rachel, and I think that that is pretty, there's a decent drop off from there.
Yeah.
I think it's similar to the way that pickleball was a couple years ago, where it was Ben and Colin versus Matt and Riley every final, and then it was Ben and Colin versus J-Dub and Dylan every final. I think we're going to see Anna and Rachel versus Catherine and Anna Lee pretty much every final.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other big takeaways from BPA?
No, I got nothing.
All right. Let's bring in Dan. Okay. Dan, welcome to Pickle Pod. Thanks for waiting, being patient. Saw you in the waiting room there, but good to have you here. Excited to hear a little bit more about Pickle, the skins. I just gifted Zane his custom paddle.
Yeah, that's wild. You got that turned around pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was a pretty fun picture that Thomas sent over. I was like, oh man, that is perfect. So we had a lot of fun putting that into the graphics and getting it printed out for you. So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. So tell me, like, obviously we know about Pickle. We know that, you know, probably made most, I guess, notable from Tyra and Gabe's recent success. They were sort of the first people to sign on to the company. How long have you had these skins in the works?
Yeah, I've been working on skins for probably about a year. And, you know, I started noticing just what was happening with raw carbon fiber resin paddles and even the sprayed on type of grit and how it would wear away just when I was playing with various paddles. And then after getting involved with professional pickleball, I mean, my first event was MLP down in Atlanta, and I saw the stacks of paddles that every brand would bring to make sure they passed testing. And I started, you know, asking questions. I mean, I'm an inventor, I'm very curious. And, you know, the answer was, there's just a lot of batch to batch consistency in the grit, you know, from above roughness standards and, you know, and below them. So I just started really looking at, you know, how could I come up with something that would give a more consistent surface on a paddle and also give you more durability and add a fun factor with it too, with fun branding and graphics. And it just kind of started with that. So a lot of it came down to just understanding the rules and, you know, what kind of box that I had to work within.
Right. Okay.
So, sorry, I don't know if you had something else, but I wanted
a list, but go ahead.
You have a list?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to know, like, understanding the rules, right? So my first question as I see this is, I thought there was a rule against, from USA Pickleball, removable parts. So how does a something that gets slapped on to the face of a paddle pass paddle manufacturing rules?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting, if you really read into the rules in particular about surface finish, removability, and things like that, you have to understand what they're trying to prevent. And that is trampoline effects, you know, or putting a sheet of rubber on the paddle that will give you 5,000 RPM spin, right? So I think that you have to take a look at it as USPAP being a new governing body, right? They're trying to navigate this crazy paddle market right now when you have so many incoming paddles. And I think that the main breaking point, that I had with USAP was them understanding all the issues that the market and the industry is having with the current surfaces. So when I was able to prove to them, that having a skin at a certain thickness made out of a certain material does not really affect how the paddle plays. And we've proven it by doing testing without the skin and with the skin. And you see that it really doesn't affect their main testing parameters, such as deflection or the coefficient of friction or roughness. And I think that was part of it. And then number two was they want to have a skin that is combined with a paddle. And that's how they're testing these. Today, you can't just have a random skin with a USAP seal. We have to have a separate part number on our paddle and on the skin that when they're put together, it's a part number that has been certified as a finished paddle at USAP. And that's kind of how it came together.
The paddle itself plus the skin equals another basically certified paddle. And it's different.
And another $1,200 or whatever that I have to send in to have it tested, right? Mm. So a little frustrating, but you know what we did is, for instance, down here, see the part number on the paddle?
Mm-hmm.
So then basically on the bottom of the skin, you have another part number that has a dash. And then when those are combined, that's a separate paddle number. And that's how it was approved.
Wait, can you show us that that last one again? Not the paddle, but sure. Is that how this comes? That's how it's mailed to?
Yes, that's correct.
Interesting.
Yep. And it's basically, you take this and you peel it off like a sticker.
How thin is this? Is this like a piece of paper thickness?
Yeah, it's about 8,000ths thick, and it'll get thinner in the future, but we're starting with 8. And that's kind of a level of thickness that we've found that really doesn't affect the play of the paddle. And, swing weight's important too, swing weight and also the weight of the paddle. So if you get too thick, it really affects how the paddle feels in your hands.
Mm-hmm. So what does it weigh?
This weighs about 0.45 to 0.5 ounces, right around there.
Okay.
So for our paddles, you know, we have pretty low weight paddles like on our Hurricane Pros. They're around 7.6, 7.7. And like with Tyra, she puts, 0.5 ounces up on the top. And when you put the skin on, it really kind of, it spreads out the weight so that I've seen with players, they don't really notice the difference that much. And you got to also understand, like, who are we selling to with this skin? It's that 3.5 to 4.5 player that, isn't going through paddles as frequently as higher level players, and that the value proposition for them is like, look, I can get my spin back, and a lot of people add weight anyway, so it kind of balances out.
Okay, not to sidebar here, but we're going to sidebar. What, either of you can answer this, but tell me a little bit about how much weight are players typically putting on their paddle? Like, what's the end goal? What's the optimal weight? What's the range? Obviously, it differs from player to player. And then what dictates where you put the weight on your paddle?
I would say at the pro game, I would say the average paddle weight is probably around 8.5 ounces. I think that's where most people, that's probably where the mean is. I know some people weight it up more. Some people like me don't put any on. I like it light, and the where you place the weight just it it changes the, I mean, Dan can obviously like speak to this as well, but a lot of it's personal preference. If you put it more towards the head, it's going to make the paddle a little bit poppier and slower. If you put it more towards the handle, it just like,
creates more stability.
Yeah.
Like through the ball.
Yeah.
It's more steady through the ball.
It changes the weight distribution. So some people like it a little bit more head light. They'll put the weight in the handle that way. But Dan, I don't know. What do you think on that?
Yeah, it's funny. Just my experience dealing with the pro players, and not just Tyron Gabe, but you know, Chris Zigasheva and some other people are playing the paddles or tested the paddles. I was with another high level female player last week, and I just watched her methodically because it was the first time that she played with her paddle, and she was just adding a couple of 0.1 ounce strips here and here. She'd hit balls, then she did another one up here, and then she put two more, and she's like, ah, now I get it, perfect. And for her, it was drives, and it allowed the ball to come down further on her drives rather than popping them up as much on the net. And I had never seen anybody do that before. And I saw her do it in real time. Whereas like David for us, I mean, he loves putting on our Vantage Pro more weight down here. And he thinks he gets a better balance on it. It's an elongated paddle, so it's a little bit more swing heavy. So, you know, other people put them on the sides just so they don't get this happening as much when the ball hits off center. Personally, I don't use weights. I think Gabe Tardio is the funniest kid in the world. Gabe, here's a paddle. Okay. He just goes plays with it. He doesn't do anything to it. And it's just hilarious. So I think it's just so dependent on the player and their backgrounds, you know?
Right. So there is no one true answer. It's totally subjective based on the player preference.
I think so.
Okay. I put all my weight on the top, which gives me insanely powerful overheads, and that's all I care about.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, what weight distribution would you recommend for somebody who just struggles to even keep the ball in the court, like Thomas?
Well,
don't
I'll
laugh
tell you
at
what, Tyra. I was at Tyra
right now.
I was at Tyra with a charity event last week. We did for Big Dog Ranch Rescue. We made these custom skins for him. It was awesome. Tico Torres, he's the drummer for Bon Jovi. And we did this whole, you know, celebrity event, all these pros. And I asked her at lunch, I said, what can I do to take my game from like a 4-0 on a okay day and a 4-5 on a good day? What can I do based on what you've seen? She's like, just stop hitting drives, just hit drops and play a lot. Dinks and drops. He's like, you know, you got to work on your soft game and stop being a banger. And it's so funny, like simple things like that. For me as a novice, it's like, I love that.
Yeah. However, there's been a lot of talk recently about moving away from the third shot, hitting more drives. It seems to be trending in that direction.
Well, then someone else who had told me, it was Kyle, said, hit your drives 50%. From the baseline and use them more as a drop, and you have more time to get up to the kitchen. I was like, well, that was interesting. So I love hearing this from talking to, you know, people like you guys and the pros. It's just, the advice is great.
Zane, what would you say percentage wise you're hitting thirds versus drives?
I would say I am hitting drops probably 0% of the time. I'm hitting hybrid drop drives probably about 40% of the time and drives 60% of the time. So Thomas is full of it.
But I asked
your cap, bro, your cap.
I asked the question.
Well, I mean, that's so funny. Here's the thing. Like I say it in my clinics as well. Like you absolutely have to develop a drop. So when I'm my most offensive shot is not my third shot drive. It's actually my hybrid, the in between a drop and a drive. When I'm pushed back and they hit a good return to me, I'm going to hit a drive, and then I'm going to come in for that fifth shot drop. If I'm actually on offense and have an easier ball, I'm not going to drive it. I'm going to hit that in-between drop and drive type of thing to try and get it down at their feet. So that's actually a more offensive shot than a drive.
Yeah.
So I'm almost, I would say maybe 5% of the time dropping a third shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say
it's more of a drop drive. It's more of a drop.
Yep.
A drive drop kind of. Okay.
Drive drop drip hybrid, all that.
Yeah.
Yep. So, so how does this paddle, other than changing the how does the skin, other than changing the weight, change the way the paddle plays? Because when I think about it, and the first question that I have is, you've covered up raw carbon fiber with, what is this made out of?
Yeah, it's a polymer. It's a polymer material that's it's a film, and so the texture is actually embossed into the film to create the bite into the ball. And there's obviously hundreds of different types of polymers that you can choose from. Some of them don't like impact, and some of them will flex with impact. And that's part of the key on putting a skin on a paddle, is you want to have a film that is tough and rigid enough so that it won't break and that it'll bite into the ball with the texture. But at the same time, it has to have some elasticity so that it can allow the paddle, the carbon fiber in the core, to do its job, which is to absorb some of the ball strike and give some dwell time. Because, you know, spin doesn't just come from a texture, it comes from dwell as well, you know, the ability for the ball to sink into the paddle. And so that was part of this. It's like, you know, finding something that could handle heat and sunlight and humidity and repeated ball strikes, and that you can print on, and that you can put an adhesive on, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm kind of a part-time chemist and, you know, full-time, you know, polymer engineer. And that's what I love to do. I love to, you know, solve problems with materials like this.
All right, Dan, I want to pivot a little bit here, because you and I talked previously, and you had some interesting points about the paddle manufacturer landscape. I think you touched on the idea that a lot of the paddle brands out there right now are sourcing from a handful of manufacturers. Can you expand on that a little bit? And like, what are the implications for pickleball paddle technology as a whole because of that?
It's a small community in Asia that produces composite panels, not just for pickleball, but for other industries. If you know where, you know, a raw carbon fiber structure came from and how it's made, you know, with your internal structure with a non-woven fabric, and then you basically add carbon fiber to the top with adhesives. You know, you've got Torii and Mitsubishi, you've got a Chinese manufacturer of carbon fiber, you have the core manufacturer, which it's not like there's 20 of them over there. It's a very small subset of manufacturers, especially carbon fiber. There's a lot of capital that goes into producing that. So then it comes down to kind of in the margins. And I find that a lot of these factories, they share information. They know each other. And that's pretty typical over there. I've been doing business in China for a long time, probably since 1995. And it's shared resources, shared technology. So although you see innovation in paddles, like even the Yola paddle that came out today, it's kind of in the margin, and it's already known by the other factories before it even comes out there. So the only way that you can protect yourself is to, you know, to get an actual patent filed and the claims actually approved. And just like Gearbox did, you know, with their core and how they did this. I mean, it was smart on their part. You know, I don't agree with this paddle. I think it's a terrible paddle for the sport, but they did the right thing. They got IP protection, and they're the only one that can produce it. So kudos to them.
Sorry, I missed that. That's Yola that did that?
Oh, I'm just saying this is Gearbox. Oh, this is their core. So saying they have a patent on this, and that was smart, because I mean, it was an innovation. They worked with the factory to get this made and developed. And they have some protection on it. Yola's new Gen 3, it has another layer of foam around the inside of the, they put another foam perimeter on the inside here, around here, but that's really the only difference. And they've created kind of a trampoline effect with it to mm-hmm. get the power that they get. Mm-hmm. But you know, we sent a team around to multiple factories to decide who we wanted to work with that had the technology and the quality that we thought was scalable. And that's the key. I mean, and then you need to have a quality person there to really monitor the production, gather the data from the production, and look at the test results. You know, we don't just hop on Alibaba and, you know, go out to the lowest bidder for paddles.
Yeah.
Because you're a complete fool for doing that. They're going to change the adhesive potentially. You know, there's so many things that goes into building a paddle that in the margins can have a huge difference on the quality of the paddle.
Right.
As we see in the market, you see a lot of paddles that just fail, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. For anybody listening, if you're curious, go on Alibaba, look up pickleball paddle, go through a few of the top listings, and you're going to recognize some of those paddle shapes, some of that branding.
Yep.
It's interesting when you go down that rabbit hole because there's a lot of familiar paddles. So when you look around at the different brands, who are some of the brands that are actually doing R&D and innovating and not just, you know, sourcing from some overseas manufacturer that everybody else is?
You know, I think we've done a good job of doing that. You know, we picked some common shapes. Part of it was Tyra and what she wanted. And then the other one was kind of a paddle for everybody that we saw as a good sweet spot. But we did a lot of homework on the layers of carbon fiber, the type of adhesive used to bond everything together, and the type of polypropylene that's used in the core that we felt would have better fatigue resistance. So that, there's innovation in doing that with a paddle that's, you know, if you looked at it from a layman's eye, it looks like any other paddle, but there's a lot that goes into it. I think that, you know, Yola's innovation on the new Gen 3 is interesting. Obviously Gearbox, you know, but then you look at who's winning in pickleball. Take a look at Annalee Waters. I mean, that's a Gen 1 paddle. it's just a sheet of material they cut out. The secret is still in the sauce, but they responded to the need for more power, I guess, and they came up with that. I think Engage does a good job as a domestic paddle manufacturer. There's so many paddles that are out there. I got to throw in there for Pro XR. I mean, it's a good paddle. I mean, obviously it has a good construction that results in some good performance. So is there any big outside of the margin technology that's out there in reality when you look at high level player play with that paddle? I'd say other than the pro paddles, I don't think it's significant, you know. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think there's still a lot that we have to uncover with paddles? I mean, I would say that, you know, some of the more recent developments in the paddle technology would be that gearbox technology that's patented. Like, how far away are we from the mature state that is tennis? Tennis rackets haven't really made significant improvements over the last 20 years. The string technology has, but the tennis rackets themselves have, other than some minor tweaks, have pretty much stayed about the same. Like, how close are we, do you think, to an equilibrium in paddle technology?
Wow. I mean, for someone who's been in it for a very short period of time, but is a very curious individual, it's hard to answer that question. And I'll tell you why. A lot of it comes down to what are the rules going to be? What are they going to be? Mm-hmm. Are we gonna settle on the PPA and MLP standards, or are we gonna settle on the USAP, or are they gonna come together and decide what the sport needs to be in terms of the spirit of pickleball? So once you put a final kind of box on what the paddle should be, which means in my world, the speed of the ball coming off the paddle. Why are we testing for deflection? Why are we testing for these other things? And number two, spin. I mean, if you really drill down, it should be like, okay, the ball comes off the paddle with these characteristics, and let's put a box on it. Number two, how much spin is good for the game, and let's put a box on it. If we can put a box on the performance of the paddle, then we can start innovating what's inside the paddle and how we make the paddle instead of being so restrictive. I mean, you know, a good example is if you take a look at Proton and their surface, this is about four times the legal limit of USAP, okay, for coefficient of friction. And if you rub a ball against it, feels like rubber. I have no idea why this is legal or has a USAP seal on it. But who cares? Because if you look at John Q and his test of this paddle, they got about 2,300 RPM off the paddle. So who cares what the surface is made out of, right?
And is that just, I mean, just contextualize that. Is that a lot of RPM? You're saying that's like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What's your paddle have, Zane? Maybe 21 something?
Yeah, it's difficult to test that. I guess I'm guessing you might be going off of a Chris Olsen video,
or John Q.
John Q. I'm not familiar with John Q.
Yeah, neither.
Okay, pretty hard to test. You can work your way to spin amounts. Like I would say, I think ours came in somewhere around 2000 when Chris tested it. But there are definitely differences in how you who's swinging the paddle can change those readings. So for context, I would say if ours is probably 2000, I would guarantee I could get more than that. But I think we, I think something that somebody mentioned to me actually at the Houston tournament this past weekend was you can have an exit velocity test, right? That's a great way to test how poppy a paddle is. There's some tennis company, and I can't remember who I was having this conversation with or what the tennis company was, but basically they made a mechanical arm that swings a paddle or a racket the exact same way every single time. And then once you have that sort of technology, then you can actually have a standard way of measuring this. Chris is still doing his videos, unless he's changed it, by hitting them himself, putting a line around the ball and seeing how many times it spins. That's the best that we have right now. But we need somebody who's going to swing. We need a machine that's going to swing the exact same way every time. And then we can actually have, then we can start to put the box around spin, like you mentioned, Dan.
Yeah. And it has to do with what's the ambient temperature that you're testing at, right? How do you make sure that the balls from ball to ball are similar so that you get the same result? But in the end, you're probably looking at in the margins. But the industry should be based on ball exit speed and actual spin. Because here's another example. I mean, that's a Selkirk Lux paddle, right? Well, that's a different... texture that's sprayed on with a polymer and might have some grit in there. And then you've got raw carbon fiber. So my point is, like, who cares what the roughness is? Who cares what the coefficient of friction is? Who cares what you're putting on the paddle to create the spin? It should be what is the spin that's the result. And so I think that stifles innovation if we can't put a box around that. And, you know, and it also creates challenges because someone like Gearbox comes in and they kind of get around the rules and they produce a paddle that's as fast as an EVA paddle. Mm-hmm. And do we want a paddle that has a 73 mile per hour speed coming off the paddle? I don't know. I mean, I hear a lot of people that don't like to play against that. What do you think, Zane? Just curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these organizations all need to self-regulate. USA Pickleball's objectives are different than PPAs and MLPs, and you need to create standards to your own objectives. I cannot say clearly enough that I think that super powerful paddles make the game boring because it actually. While you think of it, powerful paddles means hitting the ball hard. No, it actually means you're afraid to hit the ball hard because it's coming back at you harder if you screw it up. Dead paddles would make the game far more interesting. So I generally think soft and spinny paddles are what the professionals should be playing with. And I think that the pros should actually have a lower standard of power than amateurs. And actually, baseball is a great example of this, right? Right. Up until professional level, you're using aluminum bats. And then at the pro level, they've dumbed it down and you have to use wood bats. So they actually have worse technology at the professional level. And I think that that's important for us. I think we need to do the same thing. I think pros can already swing super hard. They can already generate more power on their own. Let's rein in the power of the paddle so that I can actually showcase my skill and my ability to hit the ball hard. Right. And it's not just the equipment.
Yeah, I was watching JW play at Chris Hawthorne at Del Rey APP final. And the passing shots he hit with that new Babolat paddle was just like, come on. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
So did Babolat, okay, I was actually kind of curious about this. Did Babolat actually make a good paddle finally?
I saw it at the Pickle, or at the Expo when I was in Miami and touched it and felt it. And it's a funny shape. It's thin, it's hard, and it's powerful. It didn't look bad. I mean, it's not cheap, but I don't know. Chris seemed to be able to play with it pretty well.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't gotten my hands on one of those yet.
Yeah. They just came out with a new line of paddles. Yeah. So one thing, just kind of as you were talking there, is there a world where all of you paddle manufacturers get together and say, we're going to set the standard. We're going to, you know, lay out the different components, vote on each, and that's going to create the set of standards, and then we can innovate within that.
Well, I heard from more than one person that the leagues, along with USAP and then Gary's company that's doing the testing for PPA and MLP,
that's Pro Pickle Labs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of took over. That they were going to put together a group of industry or league, industry and pro players, and to try to figure that out this year. I don't know if that's happened, but based on where we're at with pickleball, especially at a professional level, it seems like a really good time now that PPA and MLP is kind of sorted and things are kind of moving along. And we know that there's issues with or questions about power paddles. It seems like that'd be the way to do it. It's like try to get everybody in the same room and have a rational conversation about what should pickleball be, right? In terms of those, that box we want to put it in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Otherwise, it's subjective. I mean, I have my opinion. I like playing with the Franklin ball because it's slower, and I like playing with a 16 millimeter Hurricane Pro because I like the soft touch and feel of it. You know, but that's just me. It needs to be a group of people that have a hell of a lot more experience than I do when it comes to how they play.
Mm-hmm. Right, because on one hand, it feels like everybody is just figuring out new ways to circumvent the standards. I think you just pointed out some examples. So go back to that Proton paddle and what you were talking about there. How are they able to stay within the guidelines but generate significantly more RPMs?
Well, it's a good question. I've asked the question to USAP. I said, I have a paddle. I bought it off their website, and I have all the testing equipment here to test a paddle for everything. And you take a sled with an 8-pound weight with a specific type of plastic on the bottom of it, and you pull it against the surface of the paddle. And if it's above 0.1875 on COF, it fails. There's measures at 0.487, I think is, 4875. I don't know why. And again, I think it should be allowed. I think they should be lobbying USAP based on the spin test. So, is it a batch to batch inconsistency? What got sent in is different from what got shipped from the factory. I don't know. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. How common?
We all know there's variance in our paddles. I mean, I could have a 32 RT and I could have a 40 plus RT on batch to batch. You just get those and you got to make sure what you're submitting is going to pass. And that's been going on forever.
What is RT quickly?
RT is the peak to valley
right.
of the texture. So that's 40 microns. So it's a distance from the bottom of the valley to the top of the peak. And it's a measurement. And what USAP is going to go to is an actual, I think it's like a histogram. So they're going to scan the surface of the paddle and they're going to measure every single peak. And mm-hmm. if any peak is above 44, it fails, because what's happening in USAP right now, I'm sorry, at PPA, you can have a peak all the way up to 60. So what the manufacturers are doing is they're gaming it. So you'll have you'll have some peaks up to 60 and some all the way down to 20.
So that you take the average comes out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how you get some serious crazy spin.
Right.
But it also leads to less durability, because the more spread out your peaks are and the taller they are, the less surface area you have hitting the ball. Those are going to braid faster too. So it's like you're chasing your tail. So,
And that's what the Sterrett device tests for.
That's correct.
And we had a lot of conversations about that device in particular and how inconsistent it is. But when you explain it like that, it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, the device is very consistent. It just has a needle that drags across the roughness and it measures how far it goes up and down. Mm-hmm. It's just the paddles themselves,
Right. Okay. So you also mentioned that you think thermoformed with foam injection are not the future. You think eventually manufacturers will move away from that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think we're still trying to figure that out. Just to give you an idea of when you take a flat sheet of core, right? Imagine this, right? And it's a big 4x8 sheet of polypropylene core, right? And you add a binder resin to it, and you put a sheet of prepreg carbon fiber on top of it, and you put one on the bottom, and you squish it in a big, huge press, all right? It's a very consistent process to do that. Now, imagine taking a sheet of carbon fiber that you cut out first with all these different layers, right? And they're all cut out ahead of time and they fold over the side in some cases. And you put that into a mold by itself, one at a time. Now you take a little needle and you put it in one side and then you have an exit on the other side and you inject a liquid foam around the perimeter. And then under heat, that liquid expands. So you get gases that come out of that. You have to burp that mold. It's a much more difficult and laborious and advanced process. And the more technical and advanced process gets, the more opportunity there is for, oh, that layer didn't bond that well. And there you might have a D-lam or who knows what. And the other side of that is you can't make this in the United States. You're not going to do that. It's way too slow of a process. Paddles would be too expensive. So I go back to, Gen 1 paddles. There's plenty of pro players playing with Gen 1 paddles. What's wrong with them? Have we sold ourselves on the fact that they have to be thermoformed, even though ours are, right? But do they have to? Do we have to pay $280 for a good paddle that will allow you to have a good, fun time on a pickleball court? I look at what Anna Lee Waters does with a Gen 1 little 12.7 with a 4.5-inch handle, and it blows my mind. I mean, it's unbelievable. And again, you put that same paddle in Tyra's hands or Gabe's hands, and you'll see something similar. So I don't know. I mean, our paddles, our Hurricane Pro is $159.99, and our Vantage Pro is $139.99. I mean, look at the players we've got playing with them and look at their success on the court. I mean, there you go. I mean, I would love to be able to make a paddle here personally. I mean, if we can make a Gen 1 paddle, I'd love to be able to offer a made in USA as an option as well. Mm-hmm. Tariffs go up again next year. That's the potential. Boom. All paddles go up in price by whatever that percentage is. be nice to have a USA made option.
The pickle box.
The pickleball box.
The
pickleball
box. Yeah, just kidding. It's the pickleball box.
The pickleball box.
It is a subscription box.
Gear, accessories, apparel.
And it comes straight to my door with all the hottest pickleball gear in here.
It's so hot, I can barely.
Over $250 of value in each box, and you only pay $99 for each one. Go to thedink.shop, undoubtedly, the best gift for any pickleballer, or if you're like me, or anybody who listens to this, you're obsessed with pickleball, this is honestly like the perfect thing for you. Okay, and then, so talk a little bit more about the skins, and I think you had an interesting comment about how it could potentially, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it could potentially make carbon fiber obsolete. Am I correct in that?
Carbon fiber or fiberglass or Kevlar, you know, like the 6-0 Ruby, which is actually a really old technology. There's nothing new about Kevlar skins. It's been used for a long time in other paddle types. It's just the shiny object now. They all have a resin surface that's made from a peel ply. Okay. It's like, imagine putting, you know, Play-Doh onto fabric and you get a texture off it. Okay. Sprayed on grit. So it's not so much the carbon fiber that will be obsolete, or fiberglass or graphite, you know, or Kevlar. My goal is to obsolete raw carbon fiber and sprayed on grit textures as the play surface that impacts the ball. And that's, I'm going to make that happen. I'm very convinced that I can make that happen. Mm-hmm. And it will result in a much more durable surface that won't degrade faster than the actual paddle core. And it will allow for a lot more fun graphics and at the pro level, even to do fun stuff like this, you know, where you have branding that can be done quickly, and just all kinds of fun, you know, options for people to choose from with their paddles. And, you know, that's my goal.
Very cool. Yeah. I mean, it's getting a little bit boring looking at different versions of a gray or black paddle. So bringing some color back will be pretty cool. Is are Tyra or Gabe playing with these skins yet? Are they going to play with the skins? Are the skins legal to play with in a professional PPA event?
Yeah, good question. So the skins are legal to play with, but we get about 1750 RPM off of them today. And Tyra and Gabe are all about the spin, and it's not good enough for them today. So the value proposition for us on the pro level was, if you look at the data that's out there, and if you lose 50% of your grit or your spin after 2 months, 3 months, if you're a frequent player, we're offering you the opportunity for $14.99 to bring your paddle back to at least, let's just call it 1800 RPM. But I'm going to have something above 2000 very soon. That's our goal, is that will be played with by Tyra and Gabe in the future and all of our pro players.
Sure.
It's there. We just decided, you know, our new paddle that we're coming out with soon is called our Sport Paddle. And this is where we're going to go after the custom branding and fun beginner player, intermediate player. It's a thermoform paddle, but no foam injection. It's good quality, great for beginners. But, you know, if you look at my back wall, that's what our website's going to look like. It's going to have all kinds of fun drop-down menus for, you know, under $60. I mean, that's our goal. So we wanted to get it out there and be first to market, knowing that, you know, we're at 1800 RPM, which is good. It's good for me. But for Tyra and Gabe, it's not there yet. So
the person that is going to use this is not a Tyra or Gabe, because they can have a perfect peak performance paddle. I'm sure you don't have a quota for them. Like, they can get a paddle whenever they want. And so yep. Their paddle might go from 2300 RPM down to, you know, honestly, I would assume they'd probably be getting rid of it as soon as there's a noticeable decline. So maybe it goes down to 2000. Whereas if you play with that paddle for forever, you could theoretically go from, say, 2300 down to 1500 And that's where that skin comes in to
yeah.
to sort yeah. of give you some of that grip back without having to purchase an entirely new paddle.
Yeah, it's funny. If Chris Olson has his database of all the spin ratings and all the paddles, the last Yola Perseus is right around 1830. So there's plenty of paddles. If you look at the bell curve on spin, they're all right there. I mean, it's 2300. Well, until today, the new Gen 3 is like 2400 for Yola. But if you go down the bell curve, it's right in there. So it's what people have been used to playing with for a long time. I mean, just look at the data. So we thought, hey, $14.99, you get to have 1800 RPM spin. It's a pretty good value proposition. Then you can also choose from customization to make your paddle look different. That's pretty cool.
How quickly can you turn one of those around? Obviously, you did it pretty quickly for me, but do I just go to the website, upload whatever picture I want, and you can turn that around like within a week, or what's a typical process?
So today, we're going to start with just for our Hurricane Pro and our Vantage Pro, we're going to have this style. That's going to be day one. They're actually shipping, I think, later this week, now that we have our adhesive in. The next stage is business-to-business opportunities, where we're going to be working with people to do charity events, or you got an event with, you know, 20, 30 people, and you want to do a bachelor party or something, like you said, a birthday party, where you would send in the graphics, we would send you back a proof. And then the next step is to do a Shopify plugin for a website so that you can actually upload your own graphics.
Right.
But the key is, like, to do a very small volume, we got to be able to take your images, upload it, have it go right into a print ready artwork. Because the second that I have to have an employee touch that file and manipulate it, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, it depends on how much back and forth. So we're kind of trying to scale this that way. But if you were to give me a print ready graphic today, I could have paddles shipped in 2 days. And that's my goal. I want to be the go-to for a custom paddles that actually, the key is this. If you look at the market for custom paddles today, I mean, there's some decent ones out there that sell for over $100, but if you're going to spend the money in doing a promo or a gifting for your corporate gifting or whatever, you want to give away a paddle that people are going to continue to play with. The last thing you want to do is give them a piece of junk. And that's the problem. A lot of these custom paddles are just junk. They're like cheap Amazon paddles. So if we can turn this quickly, and then also let's say that whoever you give this to is like, you know what, I'm tired of looking at my face on a paddle, you know? Well, then they can go to our website and they can choose a new skin, and they can reskin their paddle with all kinds of fun stuff. So again, it's something that you can purchase and you'll continue to use rather than just throw in a dumpster after the novelty has kind of gone away. And that was the goal. We wanted to have a really good paddle, and you know, our wholesale price on this one is going to be phenomenal. I mean, you won't find a better value proposition for a custom B2B paddle in the market starting in May.
Cool. Okay. All right. I like it. Zane, you got anything else?
I got nothing else.
No, this is super interesting. I like being schooled on all the different technical elements of paddles and paddle manufacturing. Zane knows I struggle with some of that stuff.
Hey, you held your own today, Tommy.
Yeah. It sounded somewhat
smart. You did great.
Cool.
Well, thanks again. Thanks for the opportunity, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Thanks for hopping on. Appreciate you.
That's PickleBot.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, dollar has gone on, yeah.